You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Governor Newsom signed a new state law which repeals an anti-loitering provision that targets the sex trade. The bill was approved by the legislature last fall, but was delayed roughly 9 months to allow those for and against the bill to weigh in. In the bill, Governor Newsom said that it does not legalize prostitution, but revokes provisions of a law that has disproportionately impacted Black and brown women and members of the LGBTQ plus community. Additionally, those previously convicted can ask for those convictions to be dismissed or sealed. Those in support include the ACLU, Trans Latinx Coalition, the San Francisco and Los Angeles District Attorney's Offices. However, the opposition includes the Republican Senate Caucus and Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. Their argument is that the unintended consequences of this new law will embolden human traffickers and hinder law enforcement's ability to help victims. Joining us today to talk about the challenges of sex workers and what this new law could do is the co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project, Kristen D'Angelo. Welcome to Insight, Kristen. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You know, I think it's important to lay out the challenges, and we're going to dive into that, and also the misconceptions that has led to legislation, which has now become state law. But lived experience is just invaluable, and you've used that towards advocacy and support for others. I'd love to start with your story, to whatever length you're comfortable, and how that led you to become the co-founder of your nonprofit.
Okay, so I myself am I identify as a survivor of trafficking. I've also been engaged in survival sex, which is how I got into the sex trade. It wasn't through being exploited or trafficked, and then later became a consensual sex worker for the majority of my adult life. So through these years and through this time, I began to see that the laws we had weren't working. In fact, they only served to hurt the more marginalized of us. And it continued to happen. And by the time I had gone to college and gotten out of the sex trade and started doing other things with my life, I realized that I had a very unique experience that allowed me to see all sides of it, where many times people are only a consensual sex worker, or they've been engaged in survival their whole life and don't even identify as a sex worker, or maybe they've been trafficked and that's the only experience they've had. But because I've been through all three of those sectors of the sex trade, I began to see it from a different picture and began to realize that the laws that we have currently are broken. And so the way I got involved in advocacy was through that. I did a documentary to sort of humanize people in the sex trade. And that began my path through lobbying and activism and co-sponsoring laws and things like that to change what was happening in the state of California and across the United States.
Your organization, the Sex Workers Outreach Project, it works to dismantle the stigma of both trafficking victims and those who engage in survival sex. What is often missing from this conversation that you wish was talked about more?
I wish that it was, that's a big question. Okay, so normally when we talk about the sex trade, it's sensationalized. We're either talking about, you know, some lurid crime, or we're talking about somebody who's been held captive in a room, or somebody who's a madam who's made a lot of money, or things that in another industry, like if you've made a lot of money, you'd be applauded. But here, nope, you're going to prison for that. So we always talk about it in a derogatory fashion. People very few times recognize that it's a labor industry like other industries. We're no different than anybody else who gets up and goes to their job every day. This is just the industry we're in. And part of the reason that the things happen, do happen in our industry, in the sex trade, is because we have no protection under the law. Where most people, if something bad happens, you can call 911 easily. It's not that for us. It's a huge decision. In fact, most of the times we don't. So people in the sex trade come to believe that there is no protection. They aren't the same as anybody else. They begin segregating themselves from the rest of society. They live with stigma and shame. Their whole life changes because people don't validate that this is a form of labor, that people are working to put a roof over their head and food in their mouth and you know, clothes on their children's backs. This is, it's just work. And like other industries, exploitation happens when workers can't reach out for help. Just like in, you know, the domestic house keeping industry or field labor or, you know, shipping. If you go back historically, all of those have had, large amounts of abuse in them until they were given labor rights and until unions formed to make sure that there was no child labor, that people could reach out when employers were exploiting them. So that's what we'd like to see happen here, truthfully. And that's what we'd like to see the conversation to be surrounded, you know, in our industry.
When you talk about, you know, it being sensationalized, I think about, you know, terms and words like prostitution or sex work. Are those outdated or even insensitive descriptions? What language should we use?
Prostitution describes a criminal offense because that's how we've made it. It could have been, you know, a word just like a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, but we've changed that. It's part of the criminal code. So it describes, you know, a criminal offense. Sex work, when I say that, the majority of sex work is legal in the United States. We're talking stripping, massage, porn, BDSM. There are so many kinds of sex work that are legal. Now, are they treated the same as other people who work in other industries? No, they're not. I call them fringe legalization because if you're raped in that, they're probably not going to listen to you. Probably going to figure out you deserved it because of what you were doing for a living. So even though those are legal, you're still criminalized. And then when you talk about the actual prostitution, the honest exchange of a service, a physical service for remuneration of some kind, from some kind of financial help, that's where we get into the area that it's criminalized, because we have this idea that, you know, it comes from puritanical values. I mean, I'm going to be honest about this, this idea that sex should still only be between a wife and a husband. You know, it should only be between someone you love. If you're somebody who just enjoys sex, if you're somebody who wants to get food in exchange for it, there's something wrong with you. That's what our society still says. You know, if you're somebody who just enjoys that physical contact, that's not okay. You know, so I don't even know where I was going with that, but our rhetoric surrounding the sex trade needs to change.
This recent law that Governor Newsom signed last month on July 1st, I believe, you know, it said it targets the disproportionate harassment of women and transgender adults who are often people of color. What are the biggest changes you think this law will produce?
It will allow people in marginalized communities to walk down the street without being ticketed, cited, or arrested just for being there. Most people don't know that that exists still. What I mean by that is up until, well, still today, they just did a sting. They just cited 10 people right after this bill passed, because a bill passed, it doesn't go into law until January 1st of the next year. So it's still not law yet. It's just passed. So the way the law stands in the state of California right now, we have something called loitering with intent to commit prostitution. And what that means is if you're in a quote unquote area where prostitution occurs. So like in Sacramento, that could be anywhere near Stockton Boulevard, anywhere near Watt Avenue. It could be Auburn Boulevard. It could be Florin Road. It could be West Capitol Avenue and West Sac, any place that they believe prostitution occurs. So if you're in that area, the police can look at you and put together a number of elements and say, that's enough to cite you. That's enough for you to go to jail. And it's crazy because you do not need to commit a crime. There is no crime involved. Obviously, intent, loitering with intent means you haven't done it. You're just, they think you're thinking about doing it. And so, unfortunately, in the arrest records that we've pulled and what we've seen, here's how it looks. Okay, and these are things I've seen written by police reports. Like, black woman in tube top and short skirt walking down Watt Avenue at night, seen talking to a car. Officers approached her and told her to get off the street. If they saw her again, they'd arrest her. 15 minutes later, a woman seen walking on side street near Watt Avenue. Officers stopped and cited her for loitering with intent. So what that says is they could look at somebody and they could just say, we don't want you in the area. We don't like you. So we're going to take and we're going to give you a case. And unfortunately, loitering with intent is seen by employers and the rest of the world when you're trying to get a job as a prostitution case. And it's very hard to fight that, because how do you prove something that's not happening? How do you prove you weren't there? And I know they say that the prosecution has to prove you were intending on doing it. Unfortunately, many of the people in marginalized communities, many of the women who are women of color, they're young. By the time they're 22, they can have five of these cases just for walking in their neighborhoods. We see that with the trans population too. So it's a law that should never be on the books, because people aren't committing a crime. It's just police officers think they might commit a crime, so they're going to charge them preemptively.
What is your response to opponents who believe that there will be unintended consequences to this upcoming law and that will essentially embolden human trafficking?
Human trafficking and the law that was on the books of loitering with intent to commit prostitution have nothing to do with each other. How is that going to embolden human traffickers? That has nothing to do with it. This is something I wish people would understand. So you can change the law 57 times. That is not going to make me a human trafficker. That is not going to make me exploit somebody. I'm just not going to do it. Changing law cannot make somebody or embolden somebody to become somebody they're not, to do horrible things that they wouldn't do normally. That has to do with human character. That has to do with societal standards. That has to do with economic disparity. It has to do with a lot of things. It doesn't have to do with somebody walking down the street in their own neighborhood. I mean, that's just they're reaching an erroneous conclusion and pairing things, because that is what I call the call of the wild right now. That's what law enforcement says. Anytime we try to stand up for workers' rights, so we trying to stand up for the marginalized in our communities, they say like, oh, now everybody's going to be trafficked. If they use that word traffic, people get scared and back away because they don't want to see that happen. If they want to stop trafficking, what they really need to do is they need to take and they need to change the elements that lead to people being in those positions where they're desperate and reach out to other people. They need to look at kids that come from broken homes. They need to adjust our foster care system. We need to look at kids that are runaway and try to figure ways to reach them before somebody who's, you know, nefarious gets a hold of them. We need to look at social and economic equity to families that can't even get out from under, you know, the debt they have, or they don't have enough to eat and things like that, where they're willing to take those risks. There's a lot of things we could do. Education. But saying that stopping arresting a marginalized person from walking in their neighborhood is going to stop or is going to make traffickers embolden, it's going to make it worse. The two things don't even have anything to do with each other. They're not even in the same world.
This new California law follows a similar law that was signed in New York last year. What do you think this signals?
I think we're beginning to change. I think that, you know, we're a new country. And people here see, you know, they see the law and see what's happening through their own eyes and their own lenses. I have traveled to numerous countries and met with sex workers' rights organizations around the world, many of them that have gone before us, much, much before us, for years and years and years before we were even at this place. And I try to find out what they've done and where we're going to go and how we're going to do it. And one of the things I find in countries that have been working on this a long time is they've come to the realization that complete decriminalization, which that means people think that means that, you know, like people can do whatever they want. That doesn't mean that. That means we just stop arresting people and we don't make their profession illegal, gives workers able, you know, the ability to organize, to take care of themselves, to have safe self-regulatory boards so they can make sure their own people aren't being trafficked or exploited. So they make sure that there's job security and labor rights and health ability to take care of yourself. And so many things that we don't do in the United States because we just don't want to have that conversation. But what we see in those areas, such as, for instance, India, they decriminalized years ago. And in the first 5 years after decriminalization, they saw a 6% drop in HIV and STD rates in the whole state of Calcutta when they did that. Why? Because workers were able to access condoms and healthcare. And the health of workers in your community has to do with the health of your community. So they immediately saw a change in the health of the state of Calcutta overall. Mm-hmm. Those are the things we need to do, and that's what we like to see happen.
Going back even just in recent years, maybe a handful of years, 5-6 years, there really has been a shift in laws surrounding enforcement. I mean, going back to 2016, California passed a law that treating a minor who is engaged in sex work as a victim instead of being prosecuted. In 2019, a bill passed that wouldn't criminalize sex workers coming forward as a witness. What conversations have been taking place with lawmakers in recent years leading to these pieces of legislation and now laws? Where does the will from lawmakers come from and why now?
It's time. It's time we start looking at where our country is going. It's time we start looking at the health and safety and security of our you know, minority populations and people who are in lower socioeconomic areas. It's time we start looking at them and treating them just like they're everybody else. We historically have said, if you don't look like what we want people to look like, then we want to get rid of you. And I say that I'm saying as a country. And that's a really bifurcating conversation. And it's not that I think that people want to be that way. But if they see somebody who's transient, they see somebody who's unhoused, they see somebody who's walking on the street late at night in like a short skirt or something, for some reason, it scares people and they just would rather not see it. They would rather them be in jail than have to ask, well, why is this happening? Where have we failed our population? Where have we not taken care of our brothers and sisters? And so I think that we need to start looking at it as we are a community. And if the most marginalized person in the community is not safe and is not secure, none of us will be. And instead of dealing with that through criminalization, we need to deal with that through rights and resources. We need to start looking at what do they need to make their lives better? What do they need to allow them to help themselves so that they could change the dynamics of our life. And I think that once we start approaching matters that way, instead of that, you know, we talk about the prison industrial complex, instead of just throwing them in jail so we don't see them, you know, as soon as we start doing that, we will have healthier communities. And I think that's where a lot of the laws come from. They come from fear, you know, they come from misunderstanding. From not being able to put yourself in that person's footsteps. I always say, you know, if I had made two different choices, I may never be where I am today. I may still be in that situation. When I'm out there doing outreach on the stroll, I know that one accident, one change in my life could change my world. And most people don't recognize that because they've never been there.
Given that this law also opens the door for prior convictions to be either dismissed or sealed, for those who have been convicted, can you explain the challenge of trying to start a new chapter with this type of arrest record and how this law potentially can alleviate that?
We see people, and so for instance, I'm going to give you an example of one woman who I love dearly because I've worked with her for years and I've watched her struggles. But she came to us 8-9 years ago. And when she came to us, she was truly a victim of human trafficking. She got in the industry out of survival. She was young and had a child. But 2 seconds into it, she got caught by somebody who was going to take her money and use her. So when she came to us, she was in that position, but she also had had 7 arrests for loitering with intent. So I just wrap your head around it. She was, I think, 23, had a young baby, and had already been arrested 7 times for loitering with intent to commit prostitution while she was being trafficked. We tried to get her a job. And I mean, we tried. We looked everywhere, but everybody would see those 7 arrests and they would view it as prostitution and they didn't want anything to do with her. At the end, we finally found a temp agency that was able to place her at the Roseville dump, working with ex-felons in a program for ex-felons, because that's the only person who would take her. Now, so you know, this young lady was in college before all this happened. And now she's in a program that allows people who are hardened criminals to re-enter the workforce, but she was being trafficked. So truly, her circumstances at the end, all those arrests did not make her life better. They didn't help her. They didn't stop the trafficking. They didn't change anything. The only person, they didn't hurt her trafficker at all. All they did was destroy her life and her ability to get a job. We're starting to see a change nowadays. We really are. We're starting to see employers will go, oh, okay, we're going to look past that. However, very often and technically, prostitution is seen as a crime of moral turpitude. And that comes from way back. But that's how it's seen. So if you have an arrest for prostitution, you are barred from working in many industries for the rest of your life. That includes healthcare, school districts, state, federal, county work. I could go on to a lot, but they think you're not of the character they want. We just had in the United States a nurse who was a woman who was in nursing school, who got kicked out of nursing school because they found out she'd worked in porn. And she sued him and she won a large, large settlement for discrimination because of they basically thought because of who she was, she couldn't be a nurse. She was actually told, we don't want people of your character in the nursing field. So she actually won and was able to continue going to school. But that's not normal. They just normally are just not going to let you in. They're not going to let you have a job. Even if you get the education, you're not going to get a job. So it destroys people's lives. The idea that it's going to help them, and they say that all the time, if we don't arrest them, how are we going to save people? I'm like, you're not saving them. Like, heads up here. That's not happening. You're giving them a scarlet letter for the rest of their life. They will not go the places that they thought they would go just because of that 2-second interaction with that police officer.
Kristen, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you. You have a great day, and thank you for having me, okay?
You too. That is Kristen D'Angelo, the co-founder of the Sex Workers Outreach Project. Still ahead, hashtag West Sac Best Sac. That was kind of a mouthful. There is a vibe in West Sacramento that things are happening, and they are. We're going to unpack the city's growth along the waterfront. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.